Thank you, Maureen, and thank you, Sarah, for the setup act there. So Sarah walked us through lots of background on the MICR high-risk indicator and gave us kind of a magnified view of what's going on from provider perspectives. I'm going to look at a slightly different view. I'm going to look at how we can use that same information, that same high-risk indicator, in another setting in the context of reminder and recall. But so the talk I'm going to work my way through here over the next 15 minutes or so actually has two guiding questions. The first one is kind of a little itty-bitty question, and we'll get that taken care of in a couple slides, which is just how accurate is this MICR high-risk indicator? I think that's a fair question to ask because the work that Sarah just presented and the work I'll present kind of hinge on kind of the assumption that if we can identify these kids using administrative claims data, that indeed we're identifying the right kids. And then the second question, kind of the main thrust of my talk, is how effective is this indicator for improving flu vaccination rates amongst kids with chronic conditions? So just a two-slide look at then this accuracy of the high-risk indicator, give you a little bit of background. Again, looking at some work funded previously by the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation of Michigan, we're looking at the accuracy of this high-risk indicator specifically using parent interviews. So Sarah shared with us some interviews of providers. This is a different survey. This is focusing on parents. And basically, amongst other things, we very specifically want to understand, are these kids identified through administrative claims actually chronic disease kids? We focused on asthma because that's the most prevalent of all the chronic conditions amongst kids. So they were asked if your child had ever been told by a physician that they have asthma, as well as kind of a constellation of questions regarding symptoms, medications, health services use, as well as activity limitations, which we used to characterize severity of asthma. We conducted those interviews over a two-year period, both in March through June of 2008, and then once again in February through May of 2009. So that work is behind us, and now I'm going to boil down 2 years of work into one bullet. Okay, so there it is. 89% of parents confirmed that their child had asthma, and we also included, by the way, asthma basically by brand name, as well as other euphemisms commonly used for asthma, such as wheezy cough and reactive airway disease. So when you sum up all of that, we conclude that 89% of the kids identified as having asthma with these administrative claims truly do have asthma. So I think the take-home message there is the indicator is really pretty good. That's what I take home from it anyway. So now switching gears to the kind of main part of the talk, then our objective here was to assess the effectiveness of seasonal influenza vaccination reminder notices for children with high-risk conditions using a statewide immunization information system. We did so, not surprisingly, using the Michigan Care Improvement Registry, the MICR. And this was really what I'm going to share with you over these next few minutes. It's really a pilot test that was the first jurisdiction-wide use of this high-risk indicator to do reminder notifications, and it was conducted by three health departments in Kent, Kalamazoo, and Ottawa County, Michigan. We identified in total just over 3,600 high-risk kids between the ages of 24 through 59 months, and they were identified, by the way, in October 2008. So this was the previous, 2008-2009 flu season. So where's our study area? I hope you can see that. Yes, you can. Those are the green shaded counties are Kent, Ottawa, and Kalamazoo County, the west, southwest side, state of Michigan. So what did we do? We did a randomized design here where we randomized these kids, the 3,618 kids, into two groups, those to get mailed reminders as well as those who would serve as our comparison group and would not be reminded at that time. The reminders were mailed in November of 2008 and were sent through, your normal means, first class U.S. Postal Service mail. We did mark them return service requested, which I'll come back to in a little bit in the results. That is to say that if the notification was undeliverable, that the idea was that the Postal Service would send that back to us, which we did track. So we determined the validity and accuracy of mailing addresses using the U.S. Postal Service's National Change of Address process. For those of you who attended our talk yesterday afternoon, our two talks, this is the same process. And what we did was we wanted to ensure that we had in our analysis a real good sense that what we're looking at are notifications that were actually received by the recipient. And one way of doing that is using the Postal Service's NCOA process. We ran these data through that process, and we classified cases as being undeliverable if, in fact, if the address was invalid. That's a good clue that it was undeliverable. But also, more kind of a finer point, if a change of address had been filed for that child over a year ago, just a little fun fact about how the Postal Service works, if your change of address is more than a year old, it does not get forwarded automatically, it gets bounced back, okay? So we considered those to be undeliverable, as well as those that were had a change of address out of state, so those are no longer kids in Michigan. So those were excluded from our analysis, but importantly, they were excluded both from the notification group as well as the comparison group. So this is very even across both groups. Okay, so we assessed flu vaccination rates in what we consider to be the flu season of October 2008 through February of 2009. Primary outcomes that we assessed were all orbiting around this flu vaccination status. Did they or did they not get the flu vaccine? But then we also looked at the time until flu vaccination over that time course of October through February. And just another note, we rely, of course, heavily on MICR information, but since many, if not most of these kids were currently in Medicaid, we did augment those data with Medicaid claims in case that could inform us in any way of doses that weren't yet in MICR. We assessed these results using bivariate and multivariate associations. So let's take a quick look at how we kind of worked through our study sample. As I mentioned, we started out with 3,618 kids. When we generated those reminder notices, we note that about 6% of those cases were not even eligible to receive eligible to receive a notification. That includes, you know, kids who have opted out of the registry, deceased, a variety of other reasons where those kids are actually not even going to have a reminder notice generated for them. And then, as I mentioned, using this National Change of Address database, we excluded those cases that we considered to be undeliverable, and all told, that was 25%. And again, that was both groups, the notification group as well as our comparison group. So that leaves us with this 2,526 kids as our study sample. So when we look at that, now I mentioned at the I mentioned a few slides ago that we drew our sample in October. Well, we mailed the notifications, or the health departments mailed the notifications about a month later. It took a little while to kind of get that off the ground. So in the ensuing period, a lot of these kids were already getting doses. And of course, once they got their doses, when we actually went to do the notifications, those kids are no longer eligible for notification if, in fact, they've gotten the required doses. So 23% of those kids in that first month time period actually received the flu vaccinations that they needed, and so they were excluded from the analysis I'll share with you, which left us with 1,946 kids, 77% of the original group. So those, as you can imagine, were evenly split between our notification group and our not notified comparison group. All right, so now onward to the kind of punchline of it all. So what happened? So we take our group, this 1,946 kids, those who got notified, 29% of those kids got a flu vaccine during the October through in the post-notification time period, whereas their comparison group had 24%. So I will pause at that moment and kind of let you kind of ponder that, the 29 through 24%. So, you know, on one hand, I would say that that doesn't actually sound that high, does it? I mean, 29% doesn't sound that high. So we'll do the impromptu quizaroo. If anybody has memorized the MMWR from a year ago, does anybody know what the comparable national rates are? Anybody? It was 32%. So it wasn't that high, and that's all kids 2 years through 4 years of age. So you have to look at that and say, well, it's actually not that different, but this is a Medicaid population. And interestingly, as Sarah pointed out through our earlier work, just a few seasons before, We did this two-season study. Actually, those kids had vaccination rates hovering around the high teens. And these are high-risk kids. So actually, in years past, the rates have actually been significantly lower than this. So they actually, you know, you look at it and you go, well, that's not so high. Well, it's actually a lot higher than it had been previously. So this is moving in the right direction, I guess I would say. So just a quick walkthrough, so how those rates might have varied by some of the characteristics of the kids. As you might imagine, the younger kids tended to have higher vaccination rates. We found some differences by race and ethnicity, which is kind of interesting. Another story for another day, but the kids with a Hispanic ethnicity had considerably higher rates, and there's an interesting story behind that. Looking at the flu vaccination in previous seasons, so we went back to all previous records for these kids and noted whether in any previous season they had gotten a flu vaccine. And as you might imagine, and it has been borne out in other papers, you know, if you've gotten a vaccine in previous season, you're more likely to get it in the current season. So that held water in this analysis as well. And then likewise, kids who are currently enrolled in Medicaid at the point of time in which we drew the sample tended to have higher rates of flu vaccination. The next couple slides, I just want to walk you through kind of this walk through time here. So I mentioned we looked at time until vaccination, so there's kind of this time until event type of analysis. So if you look at the first couple of bars I have on here, and I can't even see my cursor, but we have this baseline rate, let's call it. This is October before the notifications were sent. We basically had hovering around 20%, and then onward through the flu season. And one thing I think you'll notice very easily is that two things. Obviously, this accumulative rate, so the rate grows as time goes on up to ultimately this 45% amongst the kids who were notified versus 41% who were not notified. So this, again, this modest difference above and beyond. So this is capped on top of that starting point of who got vaccinated, you know, even before the notifications were sent. But these rates actually are very high compared to what we had seen in history. So I think that this is actually very encouraging news. So then results I just shared with you, we've looked at this time analysis in a multivariate fashion, and let it suffice to say that when you control for things like child's age, race, ethnicity, history of flu vaccination, and Medicaid enrollment, taking all those things into account, those differences remain significant in these multivariate models. There is a statistical significance there, but what I would refer to it in kind of a practical sense, I would call that a modest difference. I mean, I think that's what that is, 5% or 4% difference. So I do want to say just a quick advertisement here for the importance of undeliverable notices, and I guess that theme is kind of cropping up in all my talks. But these undeliverable notices, in fact, do have a negative impact on, in this specific study, on flu vaccination rates. And I'll just show you kind of a little magnifying glass view of how that can make a difference. So when we look at notifications, if we look at this time until event kind of view of things, the red line on this chart are the kids who were not notified, our comparison group, the blue line are the kids who got the notification. And so this is starting out on the left-hand side there. That's, you know, kind of when time began, when we sent the notices, and we just kind of look at this as the weeks of the flu season go on, culminating with the end of the flu season. And obviously, as I reported earlier, you know, the notification group is a little bit higher. Let's take a look at this notification group. We're going to do a little sub-analysis here for like 1 minute, where if you look at that group, even though we attempt to pull out of this analysis those kids likely to have undeliverable data or undeliverable notices from using this National Change of Address database, lo and behold, some of those notices still bounced back as being undeliverable. So I guess let it suffice to say that that process is good but not perfect. That blue line here, 975 kids, I've now teased out in this next chart. The dashed line below are the kids who actually had their notices bounce back. They didn't actually get to where they were going. And whereas the solid line on top are the ones that did not bounce back. The point of this is, I think what you can see is there's a little bit of a dividend here of getting the notice to where it's going. In this case, it wasn't enormous, and I don't want to oversell that, but there is something there. my punchline to y'all is that I think it is worth paying attention to the quality of those addresses before you push the button and send those out, because really, if the notice doesn't get to where it's going, you don't get the prompt of the parent, you don't get the cue to action you're looking for, and the rates reflect that. So I think that I should leave you with at least a couple of limitations. This is the first sneak preview of these reminder notification system using the high-risk indicator in MICR. It was confined to 3 local health department jurisdictions. And I should say that at least in this first pilot study, the implementation varied a little bit. They did not send them out on the exact day, but they were all sent in the beginning of November. But the format of the message varied a little bit. So that wasn't tightly controlled. But the point here is that we believe that it is, one, feasible to target reminders for seasonal flu vaccination using the statewide IIS. I think we've demonstrated that here. And seasonal flu vaccination rates amongst kids with high-risk conditions were, in fact, substantially higher than historically reported. I think that is safe to say. I also conclude by saying reminder notices from the health department were associated with at least a modest increase in seasonal flu vaccination compared to their counterparts who were not notified. Improved reminder deliverability could be achieved by address corrections prior to mailing. So again, one more time, before you push the button, before you send out the notices, I think it's worthy of a good look at the quality of your address data before you invest that time and effort. So what are the implications? Targeted reminder notices to children with chronic conditions may be an effective mechanism to increase seasonal flu vaccination rates. I think that's safe to say. And improved parent contact information may lead to increased effectiveness of those reminders. So those seasonal flu vaccination reminder programs that you have perhaps for the next coming season, I think benefit from also kind of a corollary program to keep your contact information up to date. And I will, I guess, make one more point, I guess, for those of you who didn't see our talk yesterday, if you are interested in improving the quality of your addresses, I mentioned here and then yesterday the National Change of Address Database through the Postal Service. Most of those changes occur May, June, July, August, immediately prior to the flu vaccination season. So if you were going to clean up your data and use the National Change of Address database, that would be an absolutely ideal time to do it, because most of the changes occur immediately before flu season. So that seems to make a lot of sense to me. So I will leave you with kind of the rhetorical question. Not that this would ever happen, but what if a shortage occurred? What if 2 shortages occurred? Just asking. So this approach may be especially important to identify what we would refer to as priority cases. And as Sarah pointed out, and was endorsed by providers in our provider survey, 58% of those docs said, you know, they thought this might be a good idea to do reminders. Well, a greater proportion of them, I think it was 71%, said, gee, it would be really nice to have lists and so forth. This is a way to identify those priority cases and to target them. And obviously, when flu vaccine supply are in limited supply, this type of method is really, really worth its weight in gold, I think. So I think that's worthy of consideration in your jurisdiction. So with that, I will acknowledge my colleagues here and back at home at the University of Michigan, our friends at the Michigan Department of Community Health, many of them are here today, and Michigan Care Improvement Registry, our MICR friends, as well as our colleagues in Kalamazoo, Kent, and Ottawa County Health Departments, for their collaboration on this study, and last but not least, our funders at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So with that, I will conclude, and I will turn it back over to Maureen to referee the questions. Thank you very much.